This is straight out of Crumpton with your host, Greg Crumpton.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Straight Out of Crumpton. I'm Greg Crumpton, and glad to be with you today and talk about some really cool stuff, in particular, skilled trades. I know that's a shocker for everyone. Over the last little while, and I know that's a very generic term, but my memory's 60 years old in July, so it deserves a little bit of a break. But I can't remember exactly when I started following this guy, several months now, and he just really has a great view on things. And when I read his post, what I've grown to learn about him and his company, they represent a lot of things that I believe in and what I believe should happen and things that have happened in the past. So I'm thrilled today to bring you Mr. Joe Prim, founder, CEO, president, all that good stuff of Retrocraft Woodworks. So Joe, welcome to the show, my man.
Thanks, Greg, for the invite. This is definitely a pleasure to sit down and have a nice conversation with you. I'm looking forward to this.
Well, you know, I was thinking about it this morning, and I guess maybe it's been 3 months. I've been watching what you've been doing and kind of following along with your story and some of the stuff you post about, and I've commented a couple of times. It's really heartfelt for me. You know, what you believe in and what your company is all about are things that I think a lot of craftsmen, kind of connect with. But I think it's very patriotic as well. I think a lot of our founding fathers believed in some of the stuff that you and I believe in, hopefully, since we're following them. And it's just an honor to get to talk to people who, seem to get it. So I'm glad you get it so we can all get it.
Yeah, right. Let's get as many people on board as we can, Greg. I think that the for some reason the skilled trades are the forgotten stepchild that just kind of been left to do all of the work and receive very little of the accolades.
Well, I'm excited to talk about that because I think we're at a very unique point in our world. But before we dive into that, tell us a little bit about Joe, a little bit about Retrocraft, just kind of set the tone for everyone to know where you're coming from.
Well, my story kind of started, I guess, long before me. Like you mentioned, before we started here, I posted today and had that picture of a calendar back from the 1930s. But my story in the trades, really in the commercial part of carpentry anyway, started shortly after World War II, before we were around, Greg. And my grandpa was from Wisconsin. And after he got back from the big WW2, as he called it, he was walking the streets of Chicago looking for what was next and what was going to be the next opportunity for a job and to begin starting his life like so many other young men at that point in our country's history. And somebody came and tapped him on his shoulder and handed him a little handbill that said, would you like to join the Carpenters Union, and had an address on it. And he made a beeline for them because we had a family history going back probably more generations in that craft. And that kind of began my family story, because my father followed in his footsteps and my uncle followed in his footsteps. And then I ended up, despite every effort by my dad, especially, followed in the footsteps. And it has been an interesting journey, no doubt, but it has kind of come to a point here where now, earlier this year, we started Retrocraft Woodworks. And we are trying to go about building a business that holds the craftsmen and holds those that are in the field in the high regard and with the respect that they deserve, and bring along the idea of integrity and the importance role that plays in our everyday in business, the craftsmanship level, which I think only comes with time and with effort and with the desire to become better each and every day, and then efficiency. And those are kind of the three pillars of our company that have kind of come out of my experience in this business. And those are the three principles that we are really trying to hold to. And a big part of the reason why that's, you've only been following me a short time, Greg, on LinkedIn, is because I've only really been posting regularly on there for a short amount of time. Previous company I was with really discouraged anybody and everybody from being on social media, and made it very clear that posts needed to all be run through the company's organization. So as soon as I kind of got some freedom from what was going on with that, I decided that I was going to start posting on LinkedIn regularly and make that a part of what I try to do almost every day, share my thoughts and what I think about this industry, some of the short-sightedness and some of the things that we're missing, some of the ways that I think we're making this business a lot harder than we need to make it, Greg. And, you know, those are a lot of people that have kind of come on board, who have kind of joined up with my thoughts and the way that I'm looking at things. But there's a lot of people that don't. So we'll keep working at it, Greg.
Well, if you're not grinding against somebody, then you're not doing the change. I mean, a wood rasp is raw for a reason, and that's to take off the top skin. Sometimes our industries, plural, need a good rasping to kind of shake things up a little bit. And, you know, we have such a tendency to become complacent when we get comfortable. And comfort has not worked well for us the last, you know, dozen years or so with the skill shortage. And we talk about it on the show a good bit. This industry, our industry's skilled trades are made up of people. And, you know, whether you're a carpenter, whether you're a glazer, whatever your trade, you can find a lot of good people out there that want to do the right thing and want to connect. And, you know, you get some companies like you were describing, they don't want their people posting. Well, my first immediate thought is, huh, I wonder what they're hiding. Because if you're not transparent in this day and age, then something's wrong, because everybody's looking. You know, I mean, you don't buy much, or you don't hire somebody, or you don't, you know, rent something or stay at a hotel or Airbnb without doing a little bit of research. Yeah. And if you work for a construction company or a cabinet company or whatever company, and you don't have a social presence, I'm probably skeptical right there. I don't know. That's a whole nother topic, I guess, for privacy issues. But I'm glad that we were able to connect, because I do enjoy what you have to say. And I hope the hell we don't always agree on everything, because that we've lost the art of debate in this country. And I was telling this story the other day. My dad and I worked together forever. He and I worked for the same company. He was my boss a while. Then he was my coworker, as my peer. So we had these really different relationships as I matured into the industry. And we could debate on how we wanted to do something, or how something should look, or the engineering behind it, or whatever. And I mean, I'm not talking about heated or nasty, but being able to really state your opinion like you believed in it, because we both did. But then at 12 o'clock, we could go get a sandwich together and have a ball. And we've lost that, because people are so freaking offended by anything that you do or say that doesn't align with their mission. It's like you can't debate without being offensive. And nothing great ever comes from everybody agreeing on anything. Agreeing on everything. You have to have opposing views, as long as you're doing it the right way with mutual respect and poking each other for errors and design and all those critical elements that, hey, you think the door ought to be a left-handed hinge. I think it ought to be a right-handed hinge, because I'm believing that, you know, hell, maybe one day grandma's in a wheelchair and we need to be able to do whatever. And if you don't believe that, we should be able to debate that and then hang the damn door and go on down the road. But we don't have that right now.
But I think that's one of the beauties between the real world and what you're seeing and experience on social media, Greg. And in the field, that friction is always there, because it's whether you're reading the prints or a product came out a little bit different, or the hardware directions have changed a little bit, or whatever it is, there's that little back and forth, that friction, but it's resolved very, very quickly because of the urgency of the project. It's always looking to move forward. It's always looking to what's next and to what we need to accomplish today. So you get those little bits of debate and those little bits of what's the best way or the fastest way or the best material to use, but they're usually resolved relatively quickly and respectfully, because it's on to the next thing. What do we got going on next? There's always an urgency there. So I think that's one of the beauties of dealing with the field and being in the field and dealing with that aspect of construction versus this fake world that we live in at times, or can get sucked into, of social media and the news cycle and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And the other piece of that too, is while you were explaining that, I was just kind of thinking, usually the two people that are debating it know what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah.
That's the other key, is a little bit of education, because maybe I'm the hardware guy and maybe you're the guy that knows how to run the router, but we both kind of know how the door functions. We didn't bring the plumber in there to discuss how to hang the door.
But I think, Greg, you, even more so what you're saying, and why it, that's why it's important that people actually know what they're talking about in this business. Yeah. And that's another gigantic issue that we have right now in this industry, is a bunch of people that really don't know what they're talking about, but they're very certain that they know the right way, or how long things should take, or how many people it should take, when the reality is they don't. And that's where we start to run into bigger problems that exacerbate themselves, because rather than lean on the professional or lean on the person with the knowledge or lean on the person with the experience, we're making things up as we go along. And because of our title or our role or whatever it might be, the position that we're in, we demand a certain amount of respect.
Yeah. Well, we always say respects are not given. So, all right. So tell me a little bit about what you guys are focusing on. How are you building your business, and what is your target market, and how are you going about it? Because I love startup world with seasoned professionals.
It's as you mentioned there with the startup, it's nonstop adrenaline rush. You know, because everything hinges on everything that you do, everything that you say, the relationships that you're building. So it's really a nonstop adrenaline rush right now, which is great and exciting. But boy, oh boy, does it wear me out sometimes, Greg. My focus right now is really building relationships. I'm down in Texas right now. That's where we've been for the last 5 years. But one thing that I learned that I really appreciated about my time and my 20 years that I spent up in the Chicago area is a lot of what goes on up there is based on relationships. Almost everything that goes on up there is based on, you know, somebody's grandpa or their uncle or somebody in their family, or you know, their nephew, or there's some sort of relationship that goes back. It might only go back a few years, but it might go back multi-generational. A lot of the companies that I was working with there are, you know, 2 and 3 or more generation companies that are looking at everything and build everything out for the next 20, 25 years. They're not looking to make everything back today. So I've taken a lot of that mentality into what we're doing and what we're building here, and building a lot of relationships with a lot of people and a lot of unique and diverse sections and areas in this business and looking to see what works out best for us, where we can best fit in, who we best fit in with, where's the best spot for us as a company moving forward. And even as an introvert, even as somebody who would just as soon just hide out and put my tool apron on and just go to work every day, I do appreciate being able to build relationships, understand people, understand where their needs are. Right now, what we're focused on mostly is installing millwork for manufacturers. So I've been doing this for a long time. I know where their pain points are. I understand where their difficult areas are, and we're coming in and trying to be looked at and go about this a little bit differently as a service industry. We're there to serve them. We're there to install their product in a way that they can be proud of. Because the way I look at it is, very few people are concerned about what happens before the product is delivered to the site by the manufacturer. And the reality is that's the heavy lifting. That's the hard part. That's the red lines and drawings and estimating and ordering materials and building cabinets or these all sorts of cool millwork products that are coming out of their shop. But nobody really cares too much about that end, right? Everybody wants the eye candy. Everybody wants to see this product after it's installed. So the way we look at it is they're handing over a very, very important asset to us. And we look at it as being very important that that stuff is installed correctly, that that stuff is installed right, that their name and their reputation is maintained and their relationships with the general contractors, designers, and architects are held in high esteem after we finish up. And that's the way we go about it. And that's the way we talk about it. And that's the way we go about treating our customers.
Well, I think that the inverse way of looking at that is it is such a coveted piece that they put so much effort into that, you know, people just assume that it's going to look a certain way. You know, they see it in a catalog or they see it on the website or whatever, and they get this vision burnt into their imprinted on their psyche of what their office or what their, you know, whatever the heck you guys are constructing, whatever it's going to look like is what they've got burned into their brain. They're assuming that the quality at the shop is good and that people are making mill cuts right and all the pieces are going to fit together. But if you work doing any kind of detail work, you know the last 1% is what wins. And the difference between a proper 45 degree joint fitting properly and it not fitting properly, maybe four cuts, not 145 degree cut because the damn wall is out of square. You know, people don't appreciate that until they've seen it. And, you know, you see a guy taking off a razor thin slice of wood on the end with the saw at an angle just to cope that wall. But your end goal is to make it look like they saw on the glossy photo. And I think that that's the magic. I just love the detail and, you know, my business, we do a lot of crazy stuff, a lot of it after hours, retrofit, replacement. And I love the Friday afternoon, you know, everybody goes home at 5 o'clock and the office looks like the office. And then all hell breaks loose and everything's askew and the ceiling's out and the floor's covered. And Sunday morning at 2 a.m., it looks like a bomb went off. But then Monday morning at 8 o'clock, everybody comes back and it looks like the office again. It's so cool to me, but it's the little things. It's like having that apprentice walk around with a feather duster, hitting the telephones or the keyboards just to make sure that that last little bit of the detail is addressed. And when I think about you and you know, molding and casework, I just think how precise that fit and that finish is, and I just love that piece of detail about woodworking or metalworking even.
Yeah, no, I like what you're saying, and especially with that overnight type work or over the weekend type work, it really comes down so much to planning and coordination. It's and that's part of the beauty of that kind of stuff too, is just you spend so much time walking through those processes in your head beforehand, going through those, planning things out, organizing things, trying to make sure that you communicate that correctly with the rest of the team so that they understand your thought process, allow them an opportunity to interject and play around a little bit with what that game plan is going to be. But boy, oh boy, when it all comes together and you can make that magic happen and be finished up within that allotted time period, it is a really, really powerful feeling.
Well, to me, that builds a team like nothing else. When, you know, I was looking at a post, one of our companies in Chicago, it's called Midwest Mechanical. They did a weekend chiller replacement. It looked like maybe a 500 ton chiller. And the quote was, it takes months and months and months of planning to make that moment happen. Because you think about, you got the city permit, you got the mechanicals, you got the electrical, you got the street closure, you got to pay the cops, you got to have a crane, you got to have labor. All that stuff, you know, it comes down to a Gantt chart that's 48 hours long. And you got 125 things you got to do in 48 hours. And, but it's very rewarding for the folks involved, you know, including the customer a lot of times, because I always found in bringing them into the inner circle of what we're doing and how we're going to do it is germane to a good project. But when that is done and everybody says, okay, we're done and the system's working or whatever, you know, done means for you, that's a heck of a team boost, you know, and that's what kind of gives you the juice to go do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely be able to have the guts to go and do it again, because like you said, even doing those, I'll break some of those things down into so many different little tiny parts. And that way I'm mentally, even if it's not verbally, even if it's not on a piece of paper, just checking off those step by little step off that needs to be accomplished before the next thing can either be begun or before the second step or the third step can be completed as well. And that planning and coordination is to me actually part of the fun of it. I'm very much one to gig out over a set of millwork drawings and just dive into it and all the little intricacies and finding how we're going to go about building something or how things get put together and just dive into that. And what I've learned through the years, Greg, and what I find more and more interesting and something that I enjoy more and more about it is the fact that you're taking something that was in somebody's head and turning it into reality. And there's a special sort of magic to doing something like that, that I don't think a lot of people have been privileged enough to be able to feel or to really be a part of. And it is something special.
Yeah. You know how to become a millionaire as a contractor, don't you?
I'm working on it. I'll take all the advice you got for me, Greg.
You start as a multimillionaire. I do appreciate everything that you said about the process, because it is it's unique to be able to do that. It's a special skill. I think it's a trainable skill that you can teach people as well. And you know, I've enjoyed a career full of teaching people, you know, some more successfully than others. So I fault the teacher, being me, for that, because I got better, I think, as I went along. But seeing some of the guys that I've worked with in the past, and maybe they started as a young apprentice or a first year helper right out of high school, and to see where they evolve into, and then to look at what they do and see some of your old traits in there, that's pretty cool. not from an ego way, but just from a, they've taken something that was pretty good and put their spin on it and made it theirs. And I think that's really fun to watch people develop, as well as, you know, it's like the ultimate project, because projects, you know, you take A and you create B out of A and B together, or create C out of A and B together. But people are forever evolving. You know, you don't get a rubber stamp superintendent. You get a unique Bob, and Bob has ways, and then you get a unique Sue, and Sue has ways, and you really have to work at putting those folks in the best position for them that they can succeed, and they're always different from one another. Which is the part about the people, for me, is what really makes it fun.
Oh, definitely. I remember as a foreman running my first big millwork project, multi-floor, I don't remember, probably over 25 guys working for me. And I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off. And I came to the point and I realized that I had very, very little control over that job. The reality was that job was won or lost probably before I had ever knew about that project, before I had ever stepped foot out on that project. And I started mentally going through the things that I didn't control. I didn't control when the deliveries were coming. I didn't control what would be on those deliveries. I didn't control how many people I had working for me. I didn't control how many hours we were working. I didn't control who was working with me. And I just had like this long list of things that I had no control over as the field lead on the project. But then I started looking at what did I have control over? And what I had control over was setting those people up to succeed. And just like you're saying, putting individuals in this best role for them, partnering up the best craftsmen to work together on this elevations. I know these two guys, this one's challenging. I'm going to stick these guys over here because I know that at the end of the day, I trust them to get it done. I don't have to do all the math. I don't have to figure everything out. I know that they can handle it. This guy over here, I want him working on this because I know he can take care of that. And then what fell back then onto me is just doing everything I could, knowing the drawing. So when there was questions asked, I could answer questions. Having drawings there where these guys were going, knowing who was going where as soon as they finished up with what they were working on. Okay, you finished up these rooms. You're going here. When you're done, all the cabinets are in that room. All the bases in that room. The drawings are there in the cabinet. And set everybody up as much as I possibly could. And what ended up shocking me the most was how hard it was for me to keep ahead of those guys. Because when they were set up to succeed and they didn't have to go run around and look for things, when they had the answers to the questions that they needed, when they were put in areas where they could excel, they excelled and they succeeded beyond my expectations. So for me, it was a constant running around, just trying to do what I could as fast as I could to keep these guys set up and moving forward. But again, it was a very rewarding position to be in then. Because you're just setting people up to succeed and being able to be a part of watching them succeed over and over and over again. And you go from feeling like I don't have much control here to all of a sudden leveraging the small amount of control that you have to make big improvements and impact things in the biggest way that you possibly could.
You know, it's interesting that you're talking about this now, because historically I've been a culture person. I love culture of a company. I love culture of a team. You know, I love the culture of a job site because they are all unique, you know, company, three different crews, three different cultures. So I was reading something this weekend by Tom Peters that he quoted somebody, and I'll have to look it up later, but it said, amateurs enjoy culture, professionals enjoy logistics. And what you just described is a logistical home run. When you have the ability to lay Hansel and Gretel breadcrumbs out to the end of the job for your team, where they're hitting these milestones, They're gobbling it up because it's so easy and so good, and you've set them up for success, then man, who couldn't like that? You know, it's like a dentist having a great hygienist or a surgeon having a great assistant. When that hand goes down and the proper scalpel lands in his hand or her hand, not just a scalpel, but the number 316 scalpel that, you know, he likes for this procedure, and he never has to say a word or she never has to comment, bam. That's money, man. I don't know. I love the precision. I love detail. And all of that stuff to me is just like magic when it clicks. And I've been really fortunate to be the apprentice in that role of trying to think ahead of what my journeyman needed. And I've been in the journeyman's role coaching apprentices on, I don't need you to look at the torch work I'm doing right now. Look at what I'm going to be doing in 30 seconds. And you know, it's like the Wayne Gretzky deal. You skate to where the puck's going to be and not where it is. And when you start getting critical thinking happening at a helper stage, man, that can really propel people into greatness as a craftsperson.
Well, and not only that, but also set them up to succeed for the rest of their career.
Right.
Because at the younger you are and the earlier you are in your time of getting into the trades, the more malleable you are, the less jaded you are, the more open you are to suggestions, because you really don't have any opinions or bad habits, right? So if you can bring in
Now,
apprentices
hold
and
on. There are plenty of opinions.
Yes. Well,
Maybe not on
there are many
topic, but
opinions,
opinions anyway.
but a lot of times there's so much going on when you're an early apprentice, especially early on. There's so much going on and there's so many different things happening that you don't quite understand, that you might have some opinions on things, but majority of the time you're just going to keep them to yourself.
Yeah, that's how
You'll
we
share them with
learn.
somebody else after you leave work, or call up dad or grandpa or something like that on the way home from work. But for the most part, you just feel like you're in survival mode. So
Well, my
for
wife
people.
and I were talking yesterday about that, and we were talking about the difference between I've got a young guy that I've been coaching along. He just got out of high school and he's just getting going in the HVAC program, and I was describing the difference to Connie, my wife, between his journey and what I went through and some of the verbal abuse that I took. He won't have to go through that, you know. But she's like, he said that to you and you still liked him? I'm like, yeah, because that's just what we did. You know, I realized I was a blankety blank, blank, blankety blank, blank. After being told that a couple of dozen times, I finally learned to keep my opinions to myself because I didn't know what I was talking about. And we just had a good chuckle on the 40-year gap of apprenticeship indoctrination, we'll call it. So how are you a guy in a company that hires W-2, or are you 1099 in people, or what's your structure look like right now, Joe?
Right now, we're just starting out, so I'm very limited, and we're still kind of just playing to what works best for us or what works best for those working for us at that moment.
Gotcha.
The goal is to be a W-2 company.
Yeah.
That is the direction that I want to go with things. And moving forward, hopefully by the end of the year, maybe in the next few months, as we start to build up more and have more people working for us, that's a line that I want to, that's the side of the line that I want to be on.
I got you. And what is your preferred, like, what do you do well? What do y'all want to do more of work-wise? What is your sweet spot? Is it tenant up at work, or what do you like to do?
We do enjoy doing tenant build outs and tenant improvements. They kind of are a little bit maybe they're a little bit quicker. You're in and out a little bit faster on them. A lot of times they'll have some cool details, but a lot of the same thing. But really our forte and what I really enjoy doing is the hard stuff. The stuff that takes some time, takes some planning, really need to get your head into, the stuff that you want to see the pictures of, the stuff that not everybody can do, not everybody can handle. That's really the stuff that I enjoy doing, and the stuff that the team of craftsmen that I'm putting together, probably where our real sweet spot is. You know, right now we're starting out, so we're hungry and we're kind of taking a little bit of what we can get to get our name out there and show people what we can do. But the reality is that that's where I see the future. That's what we really enjoy doing, Greg. And that's what we, that's what gets us excited. That's what brought me into millwork to begin with. I came out of apprenticeship school fully with the desire. The moment I decided I was going to become a carpenter with a desire to get into millwork. That's what I wanted to do. Yeah. And out of apprenticeship school, I got sent to go build houses. So I couldn't have been farther away from my dream, Greg, of what I wanted to do and where I wanted to go. And from houses, went into metal stud framing, worked my way into commercial, did interior systems and ceilings and drywall and core board and shaft wall and all that stuff for several years before I finally was able to kind of make my break and get into millwork. And then from just getting my foot in the door with millwork into working for the big dogs. But that's from the, like I said, from the moment I really decided I was going to get into this business and to get into this industry, that has been the thing that I love about it the most is being on those unique projects, being on those unique elevations, being on those one of a kind things that not everybody gets an opportunity to work on. And most people will never even get an opportunity to see. They're hidden behind, you know, locked doors and security and are very interesting, very detailed.
Who builds stuff like that these days? You know, my initial thought is when looking back, you know, nice attorney offices typically have a lot of woodwork. I know mine does. I probably paid him too much, but I've always enjoyed going into law offices. In my business, you know, of course, it was air conditioning, but we did a lot of law office little data centers, like, you know, just the phone rooms and the computer rooms. But there would always be a lot of trim in those offices. And then my wife's an interior decorator.
Okay.
And she has an eye for trim. And the last house we built was in Charlotte, and Tony, our trim guy, he said, "Crumpton, I've never seen or unloaded as much wood for a house this small as I did yours." I'm like, I'm not sure if that's a compliment or what, but, you know, we like trim. We like, you know, three layer deep crown and, you know, just cool looking stuff that you don't see every day, you know. And I equate that, Joe, to that return air grill that's over your right shoulder. There's a lot of people that can make air come and go out of that hole. And that's the same for tenant upfit or tenant improvement. Yes, it's got to be done right, but, you know, there's more technique to that than there is magic. But the closer you get to exquisite woodwork and all that is more magic to me than technique, because there's just so many different things that are involved. And, you know, that grill to me is kind of the TI world. And then, you know, the data center or the surgical suite is more like the high level trim would be for you, you know, just because fewer people do it well. That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. But everybody's trying to get on the spruce things up a little bit right now, Greg. So even medical will have, you know, at least a very fancy lobby to their, to the, whether it just be a surgical or cosmetic surgery place, they'll at least have a very nice lobby. And even places are, you know, doing a lot of improvements and making multi-level and multi-material, like island in their break room. So there's a lot more of that stuff going on. Maybe it's a little bit cheaper, or maybe everybody just wants to have something a little bit unique and stand out these days. But it's become a lot more common to at least step up above the level that it even was probably 10, 15 years ago.
Well, I attribute a lot of that to companies realizing that they have to be an employer of choice, because there's so many options that skilled, dedicated, smart, hardworking people have. You know, if they want to go to work for, let's say, a cosmetic surgery place, they can go to the vanilla place, or they can go to somewhere that has a really nice office and it has a nice break room, the decor, the trim level. People feel good when they're in a nice environment. And if you're trying to attract quality people, like we all are, you want that to be a pull. I'm not trying to say you're bribing them with them crown molding. What I'm saying is that you're making your place of employment more favorable versus the other person, the other people's office. And it's not that much more money for your bang, the bang for your buck. And you got a hell of a cool place to go to work every day.
Yeah, and hopefully that uniqueness drives people. And, you know, even if it just helps retain people, I think that's, you know, especially in this day and age where more and more people want to work from home or do as much as possible from home, there's more and more of a reason to try to get people to come into an office or try to come into a store or to try to come in to see people face to face, which is, in reality, if we haven't learned anything over the last 5 years, I hope it's that face-to-face is still more powerful than...
It's making a comeback too, man. I believe it. I'm such a believer in get your butt in the car, get your butt in the truck, and go see somebody.
Yep.
Or on an airplane or whatever you need to do, because your deals, and that deal may be a relationship, that deal may be a purchase order, whatever, your deals flow better when you can have at least one meeting in person. Now, I know it makes sense to Zoom. I know it makes sense to team video, all that crap, when appropriate. But, and I've said this before on the show, there's an old commercial, I think it was United Airlines, the old guy's giving out tickets to everybody. And they're like, boss, what is this? He's like, you're going to see our oldest customer today. You're going here. You're going here. Because they had become so insulated and office bound that they had lost the rapport with their customer.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why I think it's so important to travel. I travel to our companies and we're spread out all over North America. And just taking a day here and a day there just to go see people that, you know, I interact with over email or over Zoom or whatever. But when you get to go have a chicken dinner with somebody and just talk shop or just talk family or talk whatever, it's just that shared experience that our human psyche and our human interaction needs to propel the relationship. So I'm a huge fan like you of the, you got to, that's why we have company trucks. Get your butt in one and go.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's I like to call all this stuff. It's a counterfeit. It serves its purpose, but it is definitely not a replacement for real human interaction, conversations, relationships. It's not a replacement for that. It's a substitute at the right time, at the right place. It fits. But the reality is that there's nothing like having that conversation face to face and being able to ask the questions and see what people's responses are and have them be able to ask you, you know, what your plans are, what you're thinking, or what, why things are important to you, and be able to convey that message and look somebody in the eye makes a tremendous difference.
And as weird as this sounds, there's a vibe that goes with that meeting mm-hmm. that you can feel. Your sixth sense can tell you if you're on the right track, or do I need to adjust? Am I being too talkative? Am I not talking enough? Are we on the right? You know what I mean? It's just that innate quality of the conversation that if your EQ is rising, which all of ours should be, we should be working on that all the time. We should be studying how we're doing. You can adjust it. So, okay, what I said that time was not good. And these things are firing, man. Your synapse between those little brain cells are kicking. So you're able to adjust in real time okay, that didn't go over so well. Let me try this. You know what I mean? And they can be little bitty tweaks. It's just, I just love that one-on-one piece. But, well, Joe, I'm going to tell you, man, I've enjoyed watching the development since I've been following you and RetroCraft. I look forward to continuing. I want people to be able to join me and watch you. So where can people get the most info on what you got going on? How can we play along?
Yeah, the best place to follow me and see what I got coming up and what I got going on is there on LinkedIn. I try to post 5 or 6 times a week on there. So that's the best place to find me. You can find me on Joe Prim on LinkedIn. And I'm getting together with a guy that I've known for about 15 years. And we've worked together for a long time in this business. And 15 years ago, we had a conversation about starting a podcast. And I think after all this time, Greg, we're finally going to put that thing together. So you can get information, follow what's going on with that. And it's just going to be a couple of gray beard carpenters talking shop. And I really want to use that as a opportunity to teach and train up field leaders, as well as apprentices and those thinking about getting into the business, to just be able to honestly answer questions, be able to be straightforward on things that we've learned, on things that we feel are important in the business, and trends that we see going the right way and trends that we see going the wrong way, and just kind of be a voice for the skilled trades out there.
I love that. You know, I think that I like the roundtable kind of discussions, even like what we're doing now. Last night, I went to my in-law's church, and they did a little singing service, what have you. But afterwards, the preacher and one of the lay persons, they sat down, and the layman was asking the preacher, okay, today you use this scripture. And this was all in 15 minutes they did it. And he's like, okay, why did you choose that? And he was just telling the backstory of why he built his sermon on that piece of scripture. And then he says, okay, then you jump way back here, you know, to Exodus. Why'd you go so far back? And it was just really cool kind of seeing behind the scenes. Yeah. I'm a long way from being a biblical scholar, I'll promise you that. But it was interesting to see how he crafted his message. And it's the same thing that we do in our work. You know, you're maybe training people on how to join stuff and make no seam, or, you know, the joint look a certain way. And maybe I'm teaching how to read a wiring diagram or whatever, but it's the behind they call it inside baseball of what we're doing. But I just thought that was really cool. I've never seen preachers do that before, but it was interesting. But along the same vein of showing people how to get there, and really enjoyed that.
So. Yeah, it's always kind of eye-opening to see, like you're saying, kind of that behind the scenes. And I think that's why there's so many different reality shows that kind of try to do that, whether it's reality or not, but try to give you that behind the scenes look at things that you don't normally get to see. And I think there's it, it it tends or can be very interesting if done right and communicated in a way that you can kind of see somebody's a little bit deeper understanding of where they came at something or why they came at it from a certain direction and why some of these things are important to them.
Yeah. And back to what we talked about it at the kickoff, you don't have to agree. Just help me understand. And I'm cool with your train of thought. I may want to learn more about it, but I don't have to agree with it. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that to me is the enjoyable part. But well, folks, Joe Prim, great guest, great entrepreneur, grabbing a gear and making a dent in Texas. So the Republic of Texas, I believe, is not a state. So proud for you, man. I'm proud things are going well. I hope that you have continued success and really look forward to following Joe and seeing how the thing evolves for you. And, you know, we all think we have a plan until we don't have a plan. And then we sit back and look and say, okay, this is what we're being led to do. And you know, I remember so many times as a business owner, sit down, make a plan at the beginning of the year or, you know, at third quarter of the previous year. And then halfway through that year, you're like, well, that didn't work like I thought it would, but it's really working. And that's the fun part to me is having a plan, but being nimble enough to make and adjust to the market or money or whatever happens to be the piece of the equation that's variable, because there's always variables. So good stuff.
Thanks, Greg, for having me. It's been fun to have a conversation with you, and you know, I'll keep following you and we'll keep in touch. This was a lot of fun.
Well, I'm certainly enjoyed it myself. And guys, y'all go check out Joe Prim on LinkedIn and retrocraftwoodworks.com, I think it is.
Yes.
So
it's Retrocraft Woodworks TX.
Woodwork, Texas. All right, go check that out. He probably will have some swag on there one day. He's got a hat on right now, so he may make his career as a hat man.
Yeah, that'll be coming at some point.
I like it. Well, everyone, thank you for taking the time with us today to join us and hear Joe and his story and what he's building out there and just some of the core beliefs that he has in our business and in our society as a whole, and just making his dent, man. I love it. And look forward to following along. And if you want to follow along with Straight Outta Crumpton, you can do that on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from, or simply go to gregcrumpton.com and you can click on the podcast tab and check us out there. So until next time, Greg Crumpton for Joe Prim. Take care of yourselves, people. Boom. There we go.
Good deal. Thanks, Greg. This was fun.
Well, I enjoyed that. I like to give them a little bit and let them, I want them wanting more. So I don't want to wear us out to the point where we run out of stuff to say, because I want people to be kind of being curious enough to go do a little homework. So
yeah, we want them to like not quite be sure if they like us or not.
Well, that's a given for me. They probably tired of hearing me, but hey, my job is to showcase good folks like you. So appreciate everything you're doing, man.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate it. We'll be in touch.
Sounds good, buddy. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye.